Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, Professor of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Great to have her along, and thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. If you have some questions or comments for Dr. Sandy, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or I'd love to have you post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. Maybe you've got a favorite photo of your cat or your dog or your pet. Post it and ask your questions there at the Larry Mueller Show. Dr. Sandy, welcome back.
Nice to be back.
Great to have you. And this time of year, we often hear about heartworm prevention.
Yeah, and if you haven't got your pet on heartworm preventative yet, it is time.
And even not only a dog.
Yes, indoor-outdoor cats, too, should be mm-hmm. on it. The American Heartworm Society is saying that dogs should be on it year-round. And, I mean, yes, they are preaching from Florida to North Dakota, but one of the main reasons why we need it in this area year-round is for gastrointestinal parasite control. All the heartworm preventatives provide some control against intestinal parasites that can be pathogenic to humans. So that's one of the reasons why they recommend it. And just with our society, the way we travel and look at the seasons. I mean, yeah. There were mosquitoes out in March for yeah. a while there when we had that beautiful warm weather. So just if you haven't started, get started and talk to your veterinarian about year-round control.
You know, sometimes on the show, in fact, fairly frequently, costs come up and you know, we know that pets can be costly, but depending on the breed, for example,
mm-hmm.
The age maybe, or their health, but most of us probably don't have a real idea what those costs
right.
are.
Yeah, and when you're adopting a pet, it's really important to start thinking about that, because I see every day people, you know, maybe they can afford the pet, but they don't have the time to do the things that they need to do, like take them to training classes. The American Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals came out with some kind of basic guidelines, and they said that for dogs, a medium-sized dog, so this is, you know, in a lot of, when they're talking medium, like beagle, maybe a little bit bigger, they say the first year of owning that pet, and this is not including the cost of purchasing the pet, is going to run about $1,500. First year. And after that, about $700 annually. And so that's what you need to be budgeting for. For cats, they're a little less expensive, $1,000 for the first year, and about $700 per year after that. So, pets yeah. are a luxury. But my advice is the best way for you to save money with owning a pet is preventive care. Keep their weight under control, because that's going to prevent so many health problems, and feed them a good quality diet and, you know, keep their teeth brushed and do all those things. And you're going to be saving yourself a lot of expenses down the road.
In the long run, that's going to be mm-hmm. money well spent and saved.
Yeah, you got it.
Diane in Pulaski has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Larry and Dr. Sandy. I love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And it's very timely for me because I have a 4-year-old male neutered overweight cat who has a urinary tract blockage. And this is the second time now they had to catheterize him.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's hard. Yeah.
My vet informed me that they usually do it like 3 times and then they'll decide to do surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the usual progression of treatment, or are there other options?
Well, it kind of depends on what is causing your cat to obstruct. There are several things that can happen. We do see some cats that are prone to making bladder stones and crystals. And so if that is what's causing the obstruction, if when they get a urine sample, they're finding that he's got oxalate crystals or struvite crystals and stones,
yeah.
then there are special diets that you can put the cat on to help prevent the recurrence of those, you know, try to limit the amount of crystals that the cat's making. The reason why male cats tend to have more problems is because their urethra is much narrower than it is in a female. And so they are prone to obstructing. But we also see cats without crystals or having problems like that in their bladder that just develop mucus plugs and kind of other, like, just debris. And it's usually associated with a condition called sterile cystitis. So cats that get stressed start having some blood in their urine. They get clots and material plugging up their urethra, and then they can't go to the bathroom to urinate, and it becomes a life-threatening problem. whether it's, you know, you do surgery after the first obstruction, second, third, it kind of depends on how hard it was to deobstruct them. There are some cats that it is just so difficult to be able to, you know, pass a catheter and allow them to get rid of the urine from their body. And, you know, we may be jumping in if we can't get a catheter in very early. But if it went easily and he went for a long time between episodes, then, you know, I think waiting it out and saying, let's wait. But, you know, if this is his second time, I'd be really wondering, especially if you haven't got an answer as to what's the cause of this, if it's something that can be this problem with sterile cystitis, which really can't be affected by any prescription diets or anything that way, I would be saying think about having it done sooner rather than later. So
It did say it was crystals.
Okay.
And it blocked within, they took it out on this Sunday morning and it was blocked again Monday morning.
Oh boy.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. So keeping it in longer, you run risk of urinary tract infections and things that way too. And you know, getting him on the appropriate diet for the type of crystals that he's passing. Most of the therapeutic diets that you're going to find out there they cover both types of crystals now. In the past, we'd have to determine, is it oxalate, is it struvite, because they both need different pHs and different ingredients in the food to help prevent recurrence. But now they have diets that are usually for both, that they just have to be on that and really push the water as well. The more water you can get into him, whether it's a kitty water fountain. In fact, I just ordered one for my cats, a ceramic water fountain. You know, I actually got it with my credit card points, and I was like, "Ooh, that's a good thing to use." And so I, you know, I've got that on the way coming, and you know, because I think it's just anything you can do to get them to drink more, and that even includes using canned cat food. It's, you know, switching over to an all canned diet. Yeah, it's going to be a little more trouble with his teeth, but you can always brush teeth, so that may help as well.
There you
go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, and good luck, Diane. Appreciate it. I love those waterers.
I know.
It's really great.
Yeah, and I think it really depends on the cat, but my cats love to drink from, like, dripping faucets and places, you know, you provide them with, you know, water dishes and things, and they just sit there. And but, you know, if you have the toilet lit up or, you know, you have a faucet dripping, so I'm hoping that this will encourage them to drink a little bit more.
Actually, it's kept our cats off the sink.
Oh, good. Good. Well,
I mean, they go to that.
I'll report back next month. It's according to the shipping company, it should be at my doorstep by the end of the week. So
perfect. Yeah. Jennifer and Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Jen.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I am calling to ask about, I guess, the risks of dental work. I had a cat who was in on Friday for dental work. A tooth extraction, and then they recommended taking the tartar off, which I agree. I do try to brush his teeth, but I'm not avid about it. But then on Saturday night, he became really lethargic. Actually ended up taking an emergency vet on Sunday morning because he wouldn't eat. He just seemed like out of it. He seemed like he wouldn't follow our hands if we moved him. You know, it almost seemed like neurological.
Yeah.
And it happened last time we had the teeth cleaned as well, but it wasn't as severe. So I'm just wondering what, nobody has any answers. I mean, we pay, speaking of spending money on pets, our cat costs us $1,000 in one weekend.
Right. Yeah. You know, dentistry is one of those things where it's really important for the pet's health to be able to have a clean mouth, because that is a source of bacteria for the rest of the body. It's a source of pain and discomfort. I mean, I don't have to get into all that, but anytime we have a pet that's going to be undergoing a general anesthetic procedure, having complete lab work done to make sure that his kidneys are working fine, his liver's fine, and I would be asking your veterinarian, did they use the same type of anesthetic protocol? Did they have him on fluids during the procedure? What did they do afterwards? Did they have him on any pain medication? He probably should have gone home on pain meds, because sometimes that's what's causing them to be down and out the next day, is that they're hurting. So these would be all things to discuss with your veterinarian. I know at the veterinary school, my dog is an anesthetic nightmare. I mean, she's had lots and lots of dental work done and teeth extracted and, you know, half of her jaw removed at one point. And if it wasn't for having those anesthesia folks right there, I mean, she would not have been able to make it. I mean, she needed special drugs and, you know, all kinds of things to keep her blood pressure up and careful monitoring. So, you know, I think that it's great that you're getting your cat's teeth done, but it may be that something's going to have to change when it comes to, you know, what they're doing anesthesia wise. So if it needs to be done, it needs to be done, but, you know, it may be some different techniques that could be used. And that may be something that you'd want to talk to your veterinarian about, a referral to a place like the UW Vet School, where we have board certified dentists. We've got the full anesthesia department with board certified anesthesiologists. And that might give you a little more peace of mind to know that, you know, he's under good care that way. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying your veterinarian wasn't giving good care, but it just, you know, I think that it's something that you need to start, you know, asking questions of your veterinarian as to what was done.
Well, I actually feel like I did ask a lot of questions because I'm really, and still I'm really unhappy with I have no answers. I mean, according to them, he was given fluids. He was, you know, only under anesthetic for 20 minutes. He was sent home with pain meds. He was sent home with
antibiotics or
antibiotics.
Okay, okay.
Another word was trying to pop in my head. I mean, he was sent with all that, and then they ran the blood work before they did the dental work. It came up clean, and then they ran blood work again on Sunday because, of course, they didn't have access to the blood work that was done on Friday, and it was fine. I mean, they just have no answers for me. It's really frustrating.
It is. And so what I would be recommending is keep your cat's teeth brushed. Dental diets, if he will tolerate them, brushing their teeth, using some of the other, like, dental products. One of the websites that I like to tell people to go to is the one that's the Veterinary Oral Health Council, VOHC's website. They have a listing there of all the products that they have assessed and kind of put their stamp of approval on as to what works, not only looking at diets, but also some of the other products that are out there, because there are so many things that you're going to find on, you know, like the shopping networks and things like that, that, you know, it may not work, and it's all just testimonials as to whether they work or not. I would only be trusting products that have the VOHC seal of approval, and you can find them on their website.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Jennifer, and good luck to you. Appreciate it. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, Professor of Veterinary Medicine at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. Lots of caller. All of our lines are filled. You could shoot us an email at talk@wpr.org. Go to my Facebook page. I'd love to hear from you there at the Larry Mueller Show. Haven't checked to see if there are any photos of pets up yet, but we'll do that in a minute or two. I had a Facebook question from Dana, whose six-year-old cat has been having loose stools, not diarrhea. They're formed just loose. Took her to the vet, ruled out any infections, also tried Portiflora, which hasn't helped either. There have been no recent changes in her diet.
Yeah, a couple things come to mind. What Portiflora is a probiotic. It helps support healthy bacteria in the gut. So it's a good idea to try, but by itself, it's probably not going to solve your cat's problem. I would be kind of going down two paths. One would be a broad-spectrum deworming. You would be surprised how often we'll see pets with things like chronic giardia, which is an intestinal parasite that can cause soft stools and gas and so on. Mm. And it's hard to find on a stool check. So sometimes if we just want to kind of get that off the table, we'll go through a round of treatment, and it's usually one that goes by the brand name of Panacure, fenbendazole, and that would be something to talk to your veterinarian about. The other thing that we see fairly commonly is a problem where the cat has what we call inflammatory bowel disease, where it may be diet related, and food allergies in cats can present with just loose stools, softer than normal stools. And when we say food allergy, it's not the brand of food, but it's ingredients in the food. Usually it's the protein that's in the food, like chicken or fish or beef or something like that. So what I would talk to your veterinarian about is maybe going on a hypoallergenic diet trial. And that would mean getting a prescription or a therapeutic diet from your veterinarian that is, usually it's a hydrolyzed protein diet where it's broken down into little bits where the body, cat's body isn't going to recognize where that protein came from. And we're looking at usually a good, 6 to 8 weeks trial, to see if that makes a difference in the consistency of your cat's stool. It's easy to do. There's several of them out there. So if your veterinarian only has one, and your cat doesn't like that particular brand, see if you can get, samples or something of some of the other ones that are out there. And it's real important when we're doing a hypoallergenic diet trial that your cat gets that and only that and isn't stealing other food, not getting milk or other cat treats. There are some hypoallergenic cat treats available that you could use as well. But that would be where I would go.
There you go. And Annalisa in Green Bay. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. We have a cat. We've had her about 2 months. She's 11 months old. And she's pretty lively, very lively. But what is bothering us is that she seems to have a kind of a real intense need to chew, including electrical cords.
Ooh.
Also, like a corrugated box.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I have cats that are like that as well.
Yeah,
and the rubber bands.
The corrugated cardboard.
Yeah, they'll chew the
rubber
corners
bands.
Off. Yeah, anything like that. Some cats just are more avid chewers. And we typically don't provide them, like we do with dogs, for things that they can safely chew on. So think a little bit differently, and maybe look at getting some of the really small, like rawhide chews and things like that your cat could chew on, even though they make them for dogs and people buy them for dogs, they could work very well for your cat. Look at providing your cat with some cat greens. They make them, you can either plant your own or you can buy them in the grocery store in little pots of usually sprouted oat grass or something and see if your kitty will chew on that. But it comes down to cat proofing your house, which means electrical cords may have to be bundled together. You may have to put something on them that tastes bad. And just make sure that, you're watching your cat when it's in an uncat proofed room, because electrical cords can mean death for your cat if they happen to bite into it. So I'd be really careful about that. We really don't know why some cats chew more than others. One of the theories is if they are weaned too early in life, taken away from their mom way too early, they'll sometimes develop some of these non-nutritional eating and sucking behaviors where they may, chew on fabrics or, eat oddball things. And so that may be it. If you've only had your cat for a couple of months, you may not know its prior life. And so then you just have to kind of deal with it. But provide safe things for your kitty to chew on.
There you go. Thank you for calling. And Pat in East Troy. Hello.
Hi there, Larry and Sandy. Thank you so much for letting me on. I have two problems that I thought of since I talked to the programmer. I have a wireless fence ready to go, and I had it for about a month and a half, and I'm afraid to start out with it because my dog is maybe the one in 1,000 that is resistant to being able to cooperate with whatever she gets. What is your opinion?
Well, I think the electronic containment systems are a great idea, especially if you live in a neighborhood that doesn't allow fences and things like that. It is a way of keeping your dog in the yard, but it also can be a problem for some dogs that are really, nervous Nellies where, if they get even one zap, they may be terrified to have their feet touch the ground. I always recommend going with a professional installer because if you work with a company that is putting it in for you, they provide training at your home and they will be able to help you with, knowing how to introduce your dog to it appropriately. They've had years and years of experience. And so working with a company is going to be better than just doing an in-home installation and you are asked, to do all the training on your own. You're not expected to be a dog trainer. You're a dog parent. that. And yes, you can do some training, but I think some, you know, this is where a professional is going to be of some benefit to you. That's why when you see these systems set up, they always have the little flags in the ground around it so that the dog has a visual cue as to where the boundary is. A good system will have a sound as the dog approaches. They'll get a little tone that says, hey, if you keep going, then you're going to get a little zap, you know, with the electronic device on their neck. And so, you know, walking your dog around, letting them have, you know, getting, you know, just that sound first. And unfortunately, they are going to have to learn that if they don't obey that sound, the next step is going to be something's going to hurt a little bit more. They do now have containment systems that use citronella, so it's a little bit different than getting a shock, which for some dogs that are you know, really, you know, inhibited and shy, that may be a little bit better for them. So that might be another thing to look into. But you've already got yours installed, and I hope you went with a professional installer so that you can call on them for assistance.
Well, mine is the wireless, and I don't know that they have installers. It's sort of up to me to decide what my dog can take, and I think she can't take it.
Yeah, well, do you know the company that put it in?
Yeah, it's called PetSafe.
Okay, yeah, I would definitely call them and just say, I'm not comfortable with this. Would you be able to send somebody out? They should guarantee their product, and if you have a dog that is not able to tolerate it, I know that many of the companies will give you 100% money-back guarantee. They'll take it out so that you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Thank you. I have one more question.
Okay.
This dog needs exercise, and I'm 81 years old, and I can't run as fast as she can.
You know, and that part of being a responsible pet owner is recognizing what you can and cannot provide for your pet and yet finding other ways to do it. And I know that, you know, back years ago when I had dogs and was on maternity leave with a newborn in the middle of winter, I ended up hiring some high school kids to come over and exercise my dog for me. Now we've got doggy daycare centers and things like that where your dog can go and play with other dogs if they're social. But you may want to look at, you know, hiring a dog walking service. And for me, it was, you know, easy, just, you know, high school kids that wanted to make a little extra money, and they would stop by and pick up the dog, and away they went, and everybody was happy. They got to, you know, spend an hour with a pet, and I got to spend an hour without the dogs with my new daughter. So, yeah. So hopefully you can find something like that to work out, because if not, your dog's going to gain weight and not be happy and start looking at other ways of keeping themselves entertained. And remember, a fencing system, regardless of what kind it is not exercise. You can put your dog out in a fenced backyard and they may just walk around and not do anything. You need to be out there to get them moving, throwing a ball and doing things. It's kind of like taking me to a gym and I can just stand there and kind of look at all the equipment. But if someone's cracking the whip saying, okay, get on that elliptical trainer because we're going to be, you know, looking at how much work you're doing, then I'm going to probably exercise a little bit more. So you still, you know, you can be out there with your dog and give them exercise just other ways rather than walking or running.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. On our Facebook page, we've got Chris and a picture of their beagle, Katie, just chilling out during a birthday party.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. Looks like Katie could probably use a little exercise.
Yes.
A little more. And then Louise sent a picture of Moo, Kitty, who's 13. With a cup of coffee.
There we go. Well, hopefully the cat's not going to drink the coffee, because those stimulants in that coffee could cause lots of problems.
Yep. So, a couple. Thank you for sending those photos. You know, and we're four fans away from 3,500 fans. So, if you haven't liked us on Facebook yet, go there. I want to get us over 3,500. So if you could do that, I'd love it. Go to the Larry Mueller Show and click like, and that'll help us out. Christina in Glenwood, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you. I absolutely love dogs, and my favorite was a bull mastiff. He was perfect in every way other than he shed so much he should have been bald. I could not leave the house without running duct tape over my clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have another. But is this typical of the breed?
It's typical of the shedding breeds, yes. I mean, any dog that sheds is going to, some shed more than others. But I have two English bulldogs and they're, hair everywhere.
Shedding factories.
Yes. And I agree with you. I mean, you see the amount of hair that comes off and you think, well, where is it coming from? But, this is like the busy springtime of the year where you've got a lot of pets going through that hair, growth changes and so on. But, things that you can do, number one, good plane of nutrition, obviously. I mean, the better the diet, the better the coat's going to be. So that's one thing. Number two is frequent grooming and using the appropriate tools. And it may be something that either your veterinarian can make a recommendation, or I like asking what a professional groomer would recommend. And so for my dogs, I use a curry comb type thing that you would use. It's like a rake that it's a metal bar with little tiny teeth on it that you see a lot of people using them on horses. But I use it on my dogs, and that seems to work really, really well. But it just comes down to, if hair is an issue for you, then you need to be looking at a non-shedding breed. Then you have to pay grooming expenses. And so it's kind of, which is worse, vacuuming more often and using, hair rollers and things, or taking your pet to the groomer every 4 to 6 to 8 weeks, depending on how fast the hair grows. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Just as an aside on this, you mentioned good diet. And how do you pick a good diet? I mean, is there a relationship between price?
Not necessarily. Yeah. Not necessarily. And there are so many myths out there when it comes to pet foods. And if you go online, are you going to listen to Dr. Google or are you going to listen to your veterinarian? And unfortunately, many people get sucked into listening to Dr. Google. And there are lots and lots and lots of pet food companies out there that are making food that has not been tested on animals, that we don't know how nutritious it is, if there's a problem with it. And every day a new brand of food is coming out there. So what you need to be looking for when you're buying a commercial pet food is, has it gone through AFCO, American Association of Feed Control Officials, diet trials, not just formulated to meet AFCO standards, which is a diet that has not been fed to animals and your dog or cat is being the guinea pig, but has it actually gone through trials where they fed an animal and watched to make sure that they did okay? So that's number one. And then number two is being good at learning to read labels. And I thought I brought in a couple of little things here. If you see something on a label that says beef flavor, how much beef do you think is in there?
Probably not a whole lot.
All it has to do is be recognized as beef. They actually have dogs that are trained to recognize chicken or beef or whatever. So as long as the dog that they've hired says, yeah, that's beef, it can have hardly anything in it, but it's recognized as beef. What about with beef? If you see a diet that says with beef, any ideas?
You bring your own beef?
Well, okay. It has to have at least 3% beef.
Oh,
that's okay. It. Okay. So the only ones is if it says beef, period. Okay. Then that has to have at least 95% beef minus the water for processing. So, beef dinners, it's anywhere 25 to 94%. So you really have to know your company, and work with your veterinarian. And, your vet, may have their own favorite foods. I'm not particularly brand loyal, and I tend to look at, how's the dog doing on its current diet? And, if they're happy with it and the owners are happy with the price, then by all means, stick with it. But it's always a good idea to shake things up a little bit. We've had major pet food recalls going on recently, and the company that's called Diamond Pet Food, there's actually been now several humans that have come down with salmonella from their pet food. And this includes everything from the chicken soup for the pet lover's soul right down to the Kirkland Signature Brands, which is the Costco version that is made by Diamond for them, and lots of everything, in between. So, having other foods that your pet will eat is really important in case there's a problem like that. You've got something else that you can use.
And we are turning next to Bill in Milwaukee, Sandy, so let's go there. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Hi, folks. Thanks for taking my call. I always look forward to hearing from you folks at least once a month. I wish it would be more often.
Well, thank you.
I have a cat. She's like 13, 14. She's up there and I shouldn't say up, but she had a bounce back on occasion the last couple of years on her blood test on her on her kidney results, and the vet has put her on or recommended a kidney diet type food, and I've tried the two that he has, which are both, well, science diet. I don't think that's a problem to mention that. I hope it's not on the radio.
No, not at all. Yep.
But that's all he has, and she doesn't seem to want either one of them. She'll eat the can once in a while. It's this science diet KD. But the dry food, which is, it's not prohibitive, but it's pretty expensive, and especially when you got to toss it out because she won't eat it. I'm wondering, doctor, if there's a way if you have any information on somebody who does give samples or a way, I really don't have access to internet too much, to try some other varieties.
Yeah, well, what we do at the vet school is, I mean, I feel very fortunate because we have a huge food room and we carry lots and lots of different brands, is I will put a goodie bag together with a can of this and a can of that and a bunch of different dry samples. And I say, tell me which one your cat likes best. And so this would be something that even though your veterinarian only carries that one particular brand, these therapeutic diets can be ordered online. You may want to even talk to your veterinarian about calling over to a local clinic and just say, hey, you know, besides Science Diet, do you carry the Nestle Purina therapeutic diets or do you carry Royal Canin's therapeutic diet? And every cat's different as to what they like. And that, you know, the important thing about keeping a cat on a kidney diet is that it is a lower protein diet, but it's very biologically available. So it's going to provide your cat with the protein they need without overstressing the kidneys, which have to deal with protein waste products. They tend to be higher in potassium. They tend to be lower in phosphorus. And the canned food, by far, we would recommend because it's going to give them more water. And since kidney disease is a function of having a water imbalance where the cat is making more urine than they should, they can't concentrate their urine, any extra water you can get into them is going to be better. So if your cat likes the can, there's nothing wrong with just using that. Nutritionally, it's going to be the same as the dry. But I don't have a good way of saying, go to this place and you can get samples. It comes down to these are diets that have to be prescribed by a veterinarian. So it would mean they'd have to come from another vet clinic or ordered online with a prescription.
Right. Well, that's what he said. He doesn't seem to be too cooperative about that. I think he wants to get the business for himself. But he did say if I found somebody else, he could fax him a prescription, you know.
Yeah, and I know that...
I don't know how to find anybody else because it's kind of a dilemma that if you call so many other I'm in Milwaukee, the other veterinary clinics, other vets themselves, it's pretty much, in this day and age, you always want to save money, but the thing is then they want to come in and see the animal, and then they'll check it over, and they'll make a prescription, so it's like pretty much, it's kind of a vicious circle.
Yeah, and you may want to try places other than vet clinics. I know here in the Madison area, we have a couple of local pet stores that have a veterinarian on staff. One of them is the Bainfield Clinic at PetSmart, and then the other one is one that, you know, here we've got one that's, I can't even think what it's called, but it's, but they are pet stores that carry these therapeutic diets. They can only sell them with a written prescription. So check the local pet stores and just say, call around and say, hey, do you have a veterinarian on staff? That can buy these foods. If so, I'm going to have my veterinarian write me a prescription and you can just go in and buy it without seeing the veterinarian there. But not every pet store has the ability to purchase these foods. They need to have, some form of a veterinary service on staff.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. John in Lansing, Iowa. We turn to you now. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I've got a four-month-old lab that has undescended testicles, and I'm wondering if there's a possibility that they may come down in the next month or two.
Unfortunately, unlikely. I will say let's wait until they're 6 months of age before making the decision as to, you know, whether we, you know, have a big issue here or not. They should be down, you know, right when they're, you know, 6 weeks of age. When you first adopt them, you should be able to feel them. They're going to be tiny at that point, but they should be there. So this is something that is genetic. It's something that you should go back to the breeder and say, hey, you know, I have this dog with undescended testicles, and that's given the name cryptorchidism. The reason why it's important to neuter these guys is, besides getting them out of the gene pool, we don't want this to be passed on, is that those testicles are more prone, that are held at body temperature, are more prone to testicular cancer later in life. And even though he may not be virile, meaning that he would not be able to reproduce, he would be sterile, but he'd still be virile. Sorry, got that mixed up there. Sure. He'd still have all the male characteristics of wanting to fight with other boys and lifting his leg on things and wanting to run down the street and look for love and so on. He just wouldn't be able to actually have babies of his own. So that's another big reason why we have these guys neutered too.
Is
so
timeline to meet the neutering have to be done in a month or 6 months?
I'd say wait until he's about 6 months of age. If they are not descended at that point, then it's time to start looking for them. And it's going to be a little more difficult surgery. For a normal neuter surgery, we just take an incision is made just in front of the scrotum and the testicles are removed through that.
Beth said that it was in an inguinal area.
Yeah, okay. Well, if they're up in that area, then they may be a little bit easier to be able to extract them. But it's when they get stuck up in the abdominal cavity where they're floating around, you know, who knows where, then you have to do an exploratory to try to find them. But even if they are just stuck up in the inguinal area, he would be a good candidate to have them be neutered. So
if he thinks that it's probable that they won't descend or drop, then what would be wrong in having him neutered within a month or so?
Yes, you definitely could. You definitely could.
The earlier the better.
You know, but like I said, I had one dog that at a 6 months of age, he had one testicle that wasn't descended, and it was funny. The owner kept saying, well, I'd pick him up every day and shake him. And I'm like, what? She goes, yeah, I would do like drop, drop. And finally she said it descended. So, you know, we call that the Holman method of getting that testicle down. But no, I'm just kidding. That's named after the owner. But I think that if you're not planning on, you have no desire to show him or anything like that, then I'd say get him neutered at any time. Now.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you, John, very much for calling. An interesting question on Facebook from Gary, who says, my golden doodle has some serious wounds, including stitches and open wounds that need to close naturally. A distant vet did the repairs and a local vet is doing the ongoing care. The local vet said to use honey rather than a salve on top of the wound when rebandaging. The local vet is saying this is a new breakthrough practice. Comments?
Well, you know, I have a daughter who is a teenager, and she buys raw honey and uses it as a face mask. And supposedly that's the new thing in the dorm is to put honey on your face. But I would be concerned, especially depending on how deep these wounds are. And I would, you know, boy, it's not something I would be recommending, but I know that there are people out there that are doing this thing, including my daughter, for, you know, various skin conditions. But I'd probably be looking at, if they feel that he needs an antibiotic or something, be using an appropriate thing for the bugs that are being cultured there.
And Tim emailed from Greenwood, I have a 2-year-old house cat, male, who gets very excited by the birds outside. Would it be mean to hang a hummingbird feeder outside my window?
Well, I think that that's good. I call it kitty television. I have a bird feeder. It's basically a squirrel feeder right outside my front window where I have a cat tree positioned so that the cats can sit up there and chatter away and watch, and the squirrels just kind of thumb their nose at them and go ahead and keep raiding the feeder. The problem with putting feeders and things very close to the window is that you may end up having some bird casualties with them hitting the glass. So you may want to put some like decals or something up there to try to warn the birds that there is something there. In my case, I just don't clean my windows. Stay dirty. So, and that seems to work well, as you know. But yeah, so
there we go.
It's definitely a good way to keep your cat mentally stimulated.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, professor of veterinary medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine, our guest here. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lots of callers online, so I think we'll go right back to the phones as we visit with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. Amy in Appleton has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I'm calling regarding the chat you had earlier with the woman whose cat had feline urinary tract disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to offer some reassurance. I had a Manx kitten, and within the first year of his life, he had to be catheterized 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, it was like $250 a crack. I'm sure it's more now.
Mm-hmm.
But he explained the surgery to me. I decided I would try it, and he lived to be 28 years old.
Well,
wow.
That's great.
Catheterized or anything again. He never had a problem again.
That's amazing. And, you know, personally, I had a cat back in the 80s that had to have the surgery done as well. And
his was done.
Yeah, and he did perfect and lived to a ripe old age. And so I think that, you know, it is something, but it is general anesthesia. It is surgery. And if you don't have to do it, if there's things that you can do to avoid having the surgery done, by all means, I think that that's the way to go. But
well, he told me before there was medicine, that was the way it was handled.
Yeah, yeah. And back then, we didn't have the good diets, and it was definitely much more difficult to deal with back then. But right now, we know so much more, and there's so many different diets and things that we can put cats on that it can prevent us from having to do this surgery. I mean, it used to be a common occurrence that we would have one of these on our surgical schedule, like one or two a week. I mean, it was just very common. Now it's maybe, you know, one a month or so. So it's really cut down on the number of cases that actually have to have surgical intervention.
Still, it's nice to know that if all else fails, we got a really proven way to cure things.
It is.
Thanks again, Amy, for calling. And Jeff in Milwaukee, hello to you.
Oh, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Two quick comments. I've got a dog that has a real long, severe history of stones and bleeding in the urine. And just recently she had what seemed like must have been a urinary infection, and got her on herbal supplements.
Mm-hmm.
It really seemed to have taken care of it.
Do you know what kind of stones your dog had?
Let's see. At one point, when she was getting medicine for that, she was on allopurinol was one thing she was on. I don't know if that was
okay.
But if it turned out that really needed to have her off of.
Yeah, is she a Dalmatian?
No.
Okay.
American Staffordshire.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, be careful with, you know, again, with herbal supplements, that's what they are supplements. And if your dog has a urinary tract infection, it's important to get that under control with the appropriate antibiotics. I know that there are some supplements that can be used. Most of them that are for urinary health are going to be cranberry extracts. Cranberry, just like they say for us, you know, drinking cranberry juice, there is some science behind it. It actually helps prevent the bacteria from adhering to the bladder wall. And so that might be what you're using, but I wouldn't use it as a sole treatment, and I'd still be, you know, treating with the appropriate medication to get the infection under control.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I also have a canned cat food that's very wet that, as I understand the importance of really having that water in the diet.
Right. Yeah. And you're talking about dogs and mentioning canned cat food, but you'd probably want to feed a diet that would be appropriate for the species. So,
sure.
And so, you know, canned dog food is great. Dogs could survive on canned cat food, but not the other way around. We can't feed cats canned dog food. But it's, you know, it's just going to be a very high fat, high protein food if you're feeding canned cat food to your dog.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you for calling. Tammy in Duluth. Hi.
Hi. I have a 10-and-a-half-month-old English Mastiff puppy, and she arches her back often, and I'm just kind of wondering, could she have hip dysplasia, or how can I prevent hip dysplasia?
Well, hip dysplasia is laxity in the hip joints, and we know that it is genetic. And so I'd be going back to the breeder and looking at what were the parents evaluated for it. And it's unfortunate that even though we screen for it prior to breeding dogs, We've really not decreased the number of dogs with hip dysplasia that are out there. I mean, we can get some of them out of the breeding pool, and it's because not all dogs are going to show signs at 2 years of age. It may not show up until later, and that's that 2 years of age is the typical age when they start doing screening x-rays. We know that besides being genetic, there's also a strong environmental component, which would include what we feed our dogs. And so feeding your dog a food to push them to grow really quickly, is going to cause more problems for those joints. And so using a large breed growth formula, and it's important for a giant breed dog like yours is that you probably keep them on a puppy formula until they're a year and a half to 2 years of age, so that you can continue to support those joints and growth. Really be careful about exercise. It's important to keep them exercised, but I wouldn't be, putting your dog in a running marathon or anything like that where they're pounding the pavement. But, playing on grass, going for walks, giving that good supporting muscle structure is helpful. You may want to consider getting your dog on a joint supplement like some glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate. That would be something your veterinarian could recommend, a brand that they may like over one over another. So talk to your veterinarian about that. And keep your pets slender. Don't let them get overweight. That extra weight is going to cause more troubles with those joints. So, it's one of those things where you can do a lot preventive, but so much of it is going to depend on, his genes that he got from his mom and dad. And so, doing your homework before you purchase a breed is probably, the best medicine, but often we don't do that, And I look at like my breed that I have right now. I have two English bulldogs. When you start looking at the statistics, like 60% of bulldogs are dysplastic, and it's because they've been selected to have those narrow hips. It's very, very high number of them have that issue. So, and unfortunately, the mastiffs rank right up there as well.
Mm. But could the arching of her back just been from her growing so fast and her muscles just need to catch up then?
If she's acting stiff and sore, it's possible that she could have back pain. There are other things that can affect them rather than their hips. We can see like lumbosacral instability where the lumbar spine joins the sacrum, and that can cause back pain. It may be that she's guarding her joints in general and is kind of like arching her back and, walking around with her legs are a little stiff. Sometimes even abdominal discomfort will cause them to arch their back if their belly hurts. So I think that if your dog is displaying, an abnormal gait or stance, having that checked out. So, going in and having a good physical exam done so that they can determine what's causing your dog to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Peter in Stoughton, hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
We have three cats of varying ages, and we periodically give them flea control in the form of the droplets that go between the shoulder blades. The cats are very affectionate with each other, especially two of them, and I'm wondering how much harm there is in one cat licking this material off of the other.
It can be a problem, and I always recommend keeping them separated for at least a couple of hours to allow the chemical to get absorbed in and the spot to be able to be dried. Some people will put like little t-shirts or something on the kitties to keep it kind of, the hair covered up until it's dry. But I think it's just as easy to have one in the bathroom, one in the bedroom, and one loose in the house for a little bit when you're putting this type of product on them. Make sure that you are using a product that is at the right weight for them, that is a cat-approved product. You don't want to be using dog products on cats, even though it may be a small dog product. There are dog products that can be very, very toxic for cats. The grooming business, it's going to depend on the products, I'd just not take any chances and keep them separated.
But just until it dries?
Until it dries,
okay.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. A Facebook question from Bex. I am wondering if Sandy can comment on the need to vaccinate for leptospirosis. I live in Madison, don't really get into swampy areas. It seems like the risk of a bad reaction to the vaccine is greater than the need for it, but my vet has Has it on the schedule.
Yeah. Leptospirosis is a bacteria. It's a spirochete that likes to live in moist areas, and it's spread through the urine of infected animals. And unfortunately, even in the Madison area, we have those animals, and they're very urbanized. So raccoons and rats are probably two of the biggies that we have in this area. One of the last lepto cases that I dealt with was a little poodle that rarely ever left its deck, just lived outside of, you know, in Madison, but over in Shorewood. And the dog ended up contracting leptospirosis, and it's because they had raccoons using their deck as a latrine, and the dog had contact with it. So your dog doesn't have to swim, doesn't have to be going to marshy or wet areas to be at risk of getting it. And I think that in the Madison area, it's something that is really important to talk to your veterinarian about. The when it comes to risk, what we've identified as the biggest cause of vaccine reactions is when the leptospirosis has been combined with the other vaccines. If you give it at the same time, but in two separate locations, so the distemper and parvo over one shoulder and the lepto in another, that dramatically decreases the risk of allergic reactions. I even go as far as, for small breeds of dogs, do it as a separate vaccination procedure. So I may get them in one time for their rabies and distemper, and then 3 or 4 weeks later get them in for their lepto and just totally separate them out. So small dogs, try to spread out the vaccines. Larger dogs, ask your veterinarian to give the lepto separately rather than in a combo vaccine. It means another poke for your dog, but it definitely is one of those things that's going to decrease the risk of having an allergic reaction.
There you go. And just looking at my Facebook page here again, Chippy the Chipmunk. We have another kind of a cool picture of a chipmunk eating
something. Yeah, something. And it looks like it's in someone's kitchen there. You know, it's got on the kitchen counter. And boy, I hope the DNR doesn't, because, you know, you have to be a licensed wildlife handler to be able to have something like that living in your home. So, yeah, I see tile and coffee cups and, yeah, so that would not be a picture I would want to promote on Facebook, no matter how cute it is, unless they're licensed. Yeah.
Well, Chippy the Chipmunk. And I'm Larry the Mealer.
Yeah.
And this is Sandy the Sawchuck. So yeah. Dr. Sandy Sawchuck, our guest. She'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you're like me, the animals that are part of your family are important to you and you want to keep them healthy and happy. Hi, Larry Mealer here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. Glad to have Dr. Sandy Sawchuck with us from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. And she has lots of great information for you, whether you're a lifelong dog owner or can't imagine life without your kitty or on your lap. Sandy is ready to answer your questions. And you can reach us by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us and just go to talk@wpr.org and go to my Facebook page. You can post a photo and a question there. And click like on it while you're there, and we'll send you regular updates. That's at the Larry Mealer Show. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuck, Professor of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Thank you for listening, and thanks to her for coming by as well. And lots of callers online, so I think we'll go to Joan in Madison right away, who has a question for you, Sandy. Hi, Joan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a question regarding a rat terrier. We have a, we're not sure, 10 or 11-year-old rat terrier, and we're wondering, is it too old to get her spayed? And the reason we're asking is because at the recent vet check we had, mm-hmm. they found a couple lumps underneath. And they're doing tests on them right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And they mentioned something about if it went to her lungs or something.
Yeah.
We're not really sure, but what...
Yeah, what we know is that once dogs have had several heat cycles, they are more prone to developing breast cancer. And it sounds like your dog has been diagnosed with some lumps in her breast.
Yes.
And whether, you know, spaying her at the time of doing surgery is definitely, convenient, and I would be recommending it as well. The fact that she's made it to this point, there's a very good chance that at some point on one of her heat cycles, as even an older girl, she could develop a condition called a pyometra, an infected uterus. And so having her uterus and ovaries removed now, it would eliminate that. One of the things that we get concerned about, too, is how much, you know, hormonal stimulation is going to be driving any breast lumps. And so removing the ovaries to eliminate that source of estrogen would be helpful as well. So, and, you know, whether she's in a physical condition to be able to withstand abdominal surgery, that would be something to discuss with your veterinarian. Spaying is, even though we do it on an everyday basis, it is a surgery that is, it's complicated. You're opening up the abdomen, you're tying off blood vessels, you're dealing with body organs that are surrounded by lots of other organs, and so, you know, it's something that you don't want to just take lightly, and there should be a medical reason for it. And I think in the case of your dog, that you've got enough reason to say, if we have to take her to surgery to remove these breast lumps, let's go ahead and spay her at the same time.
Yep.
Okay, and if in fact they find anything like whatever, it went to her lungs, they mentioned something about her lungs, they're going to check.
Yeah, we usually before, when we have a dog that we've diagnosed with a lump in their breast, before we send them to surgery, we want to make sure that it hasn't already spread. And so they would be looking for visible metastasis in the lung, little lumps in the lung, because these can sometimes spread through the blood vessels and get into the lung tissue. And if she's already got lung disease secondary to her cancer, surgery, I mean, I'd be saying don't worry about having surgery done. We just want to keep her as happy and as comfortable for as long as we can. And doing surgery to remove those lumps or to simultaneously spay her probably wouldn't be indicated. So sounds like your vet's handling everything perfectly, checking out what those lumps are and telling you to get a chest x-ray done. Yep.
Thanks, Joan. Thank you for calling. And Peter in Soldiers Grove, Joe in De Pere, it's your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hello. I have two German Shepherds, one and a half, but the purebred has this thing where he will chase shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening a couple weeks ago, and you had Patricia McConnell on, and she said she was at some clinic or something, and they had said, this might be a medical issue.
Yeah.
Well, we know that we see fairly commonly, German Shepherds are definitely overrepresented as a breed that we see compulsive disorders in. And some of them are tail chasers. Some of them will compulsively groom a spot on their body and actually create a sore called a lick granuloma. Shadow chasing, you know, all kinds of things like that. And, you know, chasing lights, bright lights, laser pointers, you know, whatever. And it can sometimes consume their life. We know that when dogs start to do this, it is usually around puberty, sometimes a little bit older. And for many dogs, it becomes a problem where that's all they do. I mean, they are so obsessed with just looking for shadows, looking for lights, or chasing their tail that they may lose weight. They may not be socially interactive. It's harder to train them and, you know, just generally keep them happy. And what we found for many of these dogs is that it's a kind of a two-prong approach for dealing with it. One is, from the medical standpoint, getting them on a drug that has some benefit to the brain that's going to elevate serotonin levels. So the typical class of drugs, everybody's heard of Prozac. Well, we do use that in dogs. There is a licensed version of it that goes by the name of Reconcile. But there are other drugs that are in that same class that we will often put these dogs on. We also approach it from the behavior standpoint, whereas if we see something that is a trigger for this, such as, you know, when they're left alone or they're stressed or they're anxious, we approach it from that standpoint as well and actually deal with it from the behavior standpoint. So I agree with Dr. McConnell. There may be a medical basis, especially when we see it in a purebred dog at a young age. It's possible that it was an inherited problem from, mom or dad.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling. And Peter in Soldiers Grove, on to you now. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Good afternoon, Doctor.
Hello.
I would like to get a Bouvier de Flanders.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is not too not too happy about it. Someone told her they were neurotic.
Well, you know, I think any time you get a dog, no matter what the breed is, it's really important that you do your homework. And so before you even go and look at puppies, if you're thinking of getting a puppy, I'd be, you know, going to dog shows, actually, you know, seeing the breed, you know, seeing what they look like, what kind of grooming is involved, looking at their size, talking to people that have these dogs to find out what kind of care they require. Then when you do find a breeder, you don't even want to look at the puppies. They're all cute and we're going to fall in love with them. Look at mom and dad and really be critical about it. You know, are they standoffish or are they really friendly and doing the whole butt wag and coming over to greet you? And, you know, are you comfortable around mom and dad? Because we know that the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, and that shyness and, you know, dogs that are, you know, either extreme of behaviors, the real shy dogs or the overly assertive dogs, can be highly heritable. So, you know, if you do your homework correctly, I mean, they are a large dog. They do require grooming. They are a working dog. And so, you know, are you going to be able to provide the dog with everything that it needs? So, and you know, when you get a dog, even though it's a breed that you may really want, your wife lives with you and, you know, she's got to be happy too, because it's not going to be just your dog. The whole family needs to, you know, buy into having a dog like this. So, you know, try to sway her by doing some of those things, going to dog shows and things. And this is the season for dog shows. So, you know, start looking around and I'm sure you'll find one. We just had a big one, here in the Jefferson area, just last weekend. So, maybe at that point you'll be able to convince her when she sees how beautiful they really are.
Yep. There you go. Thank you. Yep.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Shirley in Woodruff. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
We have a cat that we adopted about a year ago, and he had severe papillomas in each ear. One ear has cleared up almost completely, and the other one only has about a half a dozen inside the ear. He scratches both ears a lot, and we had him into the veterinarian, two different veterinarians. One didn't think it was the allergies. One thought it was just allergies. Are the two conditions related? And if the allergy thing is separate, how do we... do you recommend allergy testing?
Well, you know, I'm wondering if it's only directed at the ears, and the fact that there are lumps in the ear that may be interfering with the normal wax drainage and air circulation, is that what's causing the change in the microenvironment to allow infections to take place and have your cat be itchy? I don't know without actually seeing your cat, and I'd be really concerned if that's the ears are the only thing involved, because most cats that have allergic dermatitis are going to be scratching their face, their neck. They may overgroom their belly. They may actually have intestinal signs too, with looser stools if there's a food allergy component. So I'd be more concerned about what's going on inside that cat's ear canal. And so I hope that they have been doing cytology to look for secondary infections and see if you can get those under control before you start jumping into the whole allergy extravaganza. I think it's it may be overkill at this point.
There you go. Thank you for calling. An email from Kristen who says, I have a cat that a couple times a week crouches down and starts wheezing. Kind of sounds like he has a hairball, but nothing comes up. This started happening a couple years ago, and when I took him to the vet, they prescribed steroids temporarily. With x-rays, they couldn't tell if it was pneumonia or asthma. After the vet visit around Christmas time, I found that when he was near the fresh pine tree, he would wheeze the most.
Hmm.
We took the tree out of no longer keeps plants in the house, but the wheezing still happens.
My guess is that he's got asthma. Unfortunately, when people see these cats, they put their head out and they're like, hee, hee. They get this high-pitched kind of wheezy type sound. It can be sometimes, you know, diagnosed via x-ray, but sometimes we're looking at if there's a secondary bacterial component on top of it doing a bronchial alveolar lavage, where under anesthesia they collect some of the goobers from the lungs and actually look at the cytology and culture it to see what's going on in there. My guess is the fact that they put them on steroids, that the vet was strongly suspicious of this cat having allergies. There is a really nice website to go to if you want more information on cat asthma. And it's kind of got a weird name, but it's called fritzthebrave.com. Okay. So Fritz is the name of a cat that had asthma, and this person has started, with the help of many veterinarians and so on, a wonderful website talking about an overview, of the disease, treatments and so on. And there's even videos. And so you can watch to see other cats wheezing. And you can see that, hey, it's probably not hairballs. Hairballs are in the stomach and they're going to vomit with those.
Yeah.
So I'm more concerned about asthma, and we can see cats die from asthma, and they can have severe asthmatic attacks that continue to get worse. And interesting that the Christmas tree started it. That's plant material. You're probably bringing in some pollens and things from outside. So no live Christmas trees. Give up smoking if you're a smoker. You know, that's real important to you know, keep the air quality as best you can for your kitty.
And then just turning to our Facebook page, Travis sent a photo. Wow, what a photo here. This is my red phase bull snake that does not require a DNR license by virtue of having aberrant coloring, atypical for the Wisconsin specimen.
Really, there we go. Yeah.
Pretty
yeah.
snake, isn't
very,
it?
Very, very pretty. Yep.
Oh, and here's Mark, who says, you've been very helpful in answering several questions. About a year ago, you gave some suggestions about how to introduce a newborn to our three dogs. In January, we implemented Sandy's suggestions when we brought our new daughter home. Our two labs and one golden retriever welcomed little Aubrey with open paws and wagging tails.
Oh, isn't that great? You know, but it's still anytime kids and dogs are together, I trust dogs more than I do the kids. I mean, I've seen kids that, this funny story, but I was just at a cabin in South Dakota last week, and the people that live next door were saying that their grandson, the family has a pug with the little curly tail that sticks up, and the kid was kind of using, he was year and a half, 2 years of age, but playing with the tail with his finger kind of poking at it, and unfortunately his finger went someplace that it shouldn't have. And so, you know, that's that. If that dog was not as well behaved as it should have been, it may have turned around and nipped at the child. So they were very lucky that nobody got injured, just the kid needed to have his fingers washed.
And Donna sent a picture of Sophie, who loves rowboat rides, and Sophie's got
her life jacket.
Life jacket on.
You know, if you're out in the middle of the lake and all of a sudden a wave hits or the dog sees something and jumps out, you know, they, you know, may be able to swim to shore, but it's always a good idea to try to keep them as safe as you can with a life jacket.
And Michelle sent a nice picture of her kitty, which looks a lot like our Tiger.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
A lot like Tiger. So a nice comment from her, too.
That she's been at the veterinary school and worked with our veterinarians there. I guess the cat had some very serious illness. And, that's wonderful. Good.
Really, if you listen in, you should take a look. Go to our Facebook page. Take a look at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Over on the right side, you'll see something like posts.
Yeah.
And click on that, and you'll see a whole bunch of really kind of cool pictures. Yeah, they're really fun. And you know what? We've got Connie in Portage. Let's go to Connie and see. That's the wrong one. Let's go to Connie and see what's on her mind. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to just add one thing with the cat with the wheezing.
Mm-hmm.
We have had several cats over the years, and we let an outdoor cat come in, and he's not a pet now, but he did that constantly. And finally, he vomited up roundworms.
Okay.
And we had him treated, and he has never done it again.
Yeah, and what you probably found is that roundworms, even though they live in the intestinal tract, part of their life cycle involves migrating through the lungs, and they get coughed up and swallowed and then turn into the intestinal parasite in the intestinal tract. And definitely that's one of the things, and we've got a cat that's wheezing like this is on our radar. We would usually take x-rays. Sometimes we will, you know, and part of our kind of basic medical workup is running a fecal, and making sure that we don't have anything like that going on. So, I'm glad that that was a very simple fix for your kid. An indoor-outdoor cat definitely has at risk for intestinal parasites.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And a Facebook question from Anna, who says, I have a cat losing the hair on her ears. She just had a checkup a month ago. It was okay. There are no signs of irritation occurring with the hair loss. Any advice?
I see this frequently where start getting that kind of thin, you know, hairless. There's not a lot of hair on cats' ears anyway, especially for short-haired cats. And some breeds are more predisposed to losing hair. Some of the Rex breeds and things will get that kind of real, almost like bald ear, like the pinna of the ear will be bald. So you start wondering what's in this cat's background, especially if it's not associated with itching. There's no skin changes. The ear canals are pristine. It may just be kind of a seasonal hair loss, kind of hair coat thinning, and I wouldn't get too worried about it if there's no other symptoms else, other places.
Tom and Ladysmith would appreciate it if you could compare and contrast these flea and tick repellents, Frontline Plus, Advantix, and Vectra 3D.
Okay. Well, Vectra 3D and Advantix, chemical-wise, are very similar. Vectra 3D comes with a very cool applicator. So for dogs that have an issue with thick hair coats, it's got a longer nozzle on it, so it's easier to get the product down on the skin. Vectra 3D is only available through veterinarians. You cannot buy it over the counter. Advantix is available over the counter, and you can buy it online and other places too. Both of those products, Advantage and Vectra, contain their active tick ingredient is permethrin. And so you have to be careful with applying those around in households that have cats, because that can be quite toxic to cats, even if they just have indirect contact with it while it's still wet. Once it's dry, it's going to be very safe. But I tell people with cats and dogs, put it on at night when the dog's in its crate or sleeping with you or someplace else, and not around the cat, so that the cat doesn't risk getting in contact with it. Frontline Plus is a product that has fipronil as well as methoprene. When they license flea and tick products, for the EPA and FDA to put that, or FBA to put, FDA to put that 30-day reapplication recommendation, that is given once, if it still is 90% effective at 30 days, they can say reapply every 30 days. So you may have lost some of the efficacy. And so instead of, you know, getting 100 fleas, you may only get 10 fleas. And so the nice thing about Frontline Plus is that it has this other chemical in it called methoprene, which sterilizes flea eggs so that they don't develop. So if you are towards the end of the month and you may get some breakthrough, you don't have to worry about your house being contaminated with fleas. Tick-wise, it's very effective as well. There's actually a better frontline type product out called CertiFect, made by the same company, that is better for ticks. And so if you're in a heavy tick area, that would be the one that I would like to have people use. Frontline's available over the counter, and, you know, so you can get it all over the place. So it's, you know, I think some of it's going to depend on which one your veterinarian likes to use. I kind of base it more on, you know, Advantix and Vectra help with mosquito repellency. So if you're in a heavy mosquito area, it may make the dog more comfortable. But my still go-to product is either Frontline Plus or the new CertiFect.
There we go. And Facebook question from Danny, a quick one here. Our dog loves Greenies, the teeth cleaners by Love. I mean, she goes crazy for them. Are these an okay substitute for brushing teeth?
No.
Or cleaning?
No. They help. Okay. It's one of those things. And one of our veterinary dentists has his pyramid of dental care for dogs. And number one, the top thing is brushing. That's going to do the best. Number two would then be things like the diets and the treats and so on that you can use. So that helps. Maybe on the day that you can't brush, you could try offering them one of those. But remember, they're high in calories. And, you know, so if your dog's overweight, you don't want to be overdoing those kind of things. So brushing is still the best.
All right. And, you know, that picture of the snake that we have up on the Facebook page is a reminder that on May 17th, on that show, we'll be talking about...
Yes, one of my colleagues is going to be coming to the veterinary school, from the veterinary school, Dr. Slatke. And he's our special species veterinarian that can answer all the creepy crawly bird questions and, you know, hamsters, guinea pigs, fish, you name it. He does everything.
He does all that?
All of that, but not dogs and cats. I am his veterinarian for his his cats and dogs, and he takes care of my birds and tortoise, so...
Very good. Well, this is always a lot of fun, and you are back. You're always back on the second
Tuesday
of every month. Yep. So your next appearance will be on June 12th.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember if I'll be back. I think I will be back.
Okay. Well, it's a day before my birthday, so easy to remember.
All right. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk will be back on June 12th. That's the second Tuesday in the month of June. So we'll look forward to having her back. It's always a great time, and I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's typically what happens when she's on the program. Tomorrow, we'll talk with Philippe Coquart of Wallersheim Winery. And we'll talk about Wallersheim wines, but we're going to focus a bit on raising grapes and growing your own grapes. And a lot of people grow their own grapes, and there's a lot of people who make their own wine. And I know he'll be happy to answer those kinds of questions, so we look forward to that. And then Derek Lovitch has a new book out. It's called How to Be a Better Birder. Very engaging book. I've read some of it. Haven't finished it yet, but it's very engaging. I think you're going to enjoy it. He's on at 11:45. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.